ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, The Story of King Vena, text number 23. Now Vena replies to his Brahmanas who have given him advice to not stop performance of sacrifice. So text 23. Vena उवाच बालिशा बत यूयं वा अधर्मे धर्मा मानिनः ये वृत्तिदं पतिं हित्वा जारम् पतिम् उपासते। वीना उवाच बालिशाबतयूयं वा अधर्मे धर्ममानिनः ये वृत्तिदं पतिं हित्वा जारं पतिम् उपासते। वेन उवाच बालिशाबतयूयं वा अधर्मे धर्ममानिनः ये वृत्तितं पतिं हित्वा जारं पतिम् उपासते। वेन उवाच बालिशाबतयूयं वा अधर्मे धर्ममानिनः ये वृत्तिदं पतिं हित्वा जारं पतिम् उपासते। वेनः किं वेन उवाच replied, Balishaha, childish, Bata, O, Yuyam, all of you, Va, indeed, Adharme, in irreligious principles, Dharma Maninaha, accepting as religious, Ye, all of you who vrittiddham, providing maintenance, potim, husband, hitva, giving up, jaram, paramour, potim, husband, upasate, worship. Translation. King Vena replied, you are not at all experienced. It is very much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and are accepting it as religious. Indeed, I think you are giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship. Srila Prabhupada's purport. King Vena was so foolish that he accused the saintly sages of being inexperienced like small children. In other words, he was accusing them of not having perfect knowledge. In this way, he could reject their advice and make accusations against them, comparing them to a woman who does not care for her husband who maintains her, but goes to satisfy a paramour who does not maintain her. The purpose of this simile is apparent. It's the duty of the Kshatriyas to engage the Brahmanas in different types of religious activities, and the king is supposed to be the maintainer of the Brahmanas. If the Brahmanas do not worship the king, but instead go to the demigods, they are as polluted as an unchaste woman. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani, Namaste Sarasate Deve, Gauravani Pacharani, Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Sutarani. Mangyanam Chimarandasya Garanjana, Shalakaya, Chaksuru Miritam Jainam, Tasmai Sri Garave Namaha. It seems that the Brahmanas had already foreseen or anticipated that the king was not going to be very receptive to their correction. But they decided, they said here, go back a little bit, text 11, we appointed this Vena, king of the state, in order to give protection to the citizens, but now he has become the enemy of the citizens. Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. By doing so, we may not be touched by the sinful results caused by him. The saintly sages continued to think, of course, we are completely aware of his mischievous nature, yet nevertheless we enthrone Vena. If we cannot persuade King Vena to accept our advice, he will be condemned by the public, and we will join them. Thus, by our prowess, we shall burn him to ashes. So, this is plan A. First, try to correct him, even though they think maybe he won't be receptive. And then plan B is if he's not corrigible or correctable, then we'll take further measures. So after giving him very nice advice about the necessity of performing sacrifice to the Supreme Lord and also to the demigods at the same time, he comes right back calling them childish, infantile. You are infantile. Balisha, like a child. You're childish. Calls him a name, indicating that they don't know what they're doing. Inexperienced in knowledge. These are his own brahmanas. And adharme dharma marina, because you are advocating irreligion, adharma, you are advocating irreligion, dharma manina, under the opinion, the mistaken opinion, that it's dharma. And then he says, all of you have hitva, you've given up, so here's the simile, you've given up the husband who maintains you. Vritti means your means of livelihood. Vritti dham. He gives you your vritti. You've given up the husband who maintains you. Just like unchaste woman gives up her husband for a lover. That's his thing. Jara here means a lover or a paramour. I looked this word up because, you know, jara means old age. So I wondered how it comes to mean a lover, but it's a, well, anyway, it does, because the word jara, to grow old, jara, old, comes from this verbal root dri, which means not only to, it means to grow old or to be consumed or to be digested, which is really horrifying. And so it has a, in Sanskrit, verbs have a causative form. So it means also can mean to cause to grow old or to consume. And so from this sense of being a consumer, that is of other people's husbands or wives, it becomes a lover. Somebody's appetite's out of control. That's how it gets there, if you're interested. So this is his saying in this way. So Prabhupada says the mentality is he wants to tell them that he wants to reject their advice. And he will not say, what you're telling me is right, but I'm not going to do it. People don't do that anywhere. People hardly ever say, I'm going to do something wrong. What they say is, what you're telling me is wrong is actually right, and you're wrong. So they justify it in this way. So this is him also. They're suggesting telling him what is dharma, but he calls it adharma. So you don't know what the real dharma is. And then he compares them to one of the violators of dharma, that is a woman who deserts her husband for a lover who maintains her. The husband who maintains her for a lover. You're unfaithful, you're unchaste. So his case is going to be that you should worship me. You're performing sacrifices to the demigods, but actually I'm maintaining you. I'm giving you maintenance, and therefore I expect that I shall be I shall be worshipped instead of the demigods, or the Lord, actually. It's clear that they've already mentioned it, that they understand that the sacrifice is ultimately meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, we see that King Vena has become a competitor of Krishna. And now he wants the Brahmins to recognize this. So he's a demon. So now we get a lesson. He's the king. He's in control of the kingdom. Typically, he wants to control more and more. So he's supposed to be subordinate to the Brahmanas. I mean, the Vedic. Prabhupada has already discussed this at the beginning of this description, or in the last chapter, how although there was monarchy, there wasn't autocracy. In other words, the king, although he had monarchical power, that is to say, he wasn't constrained all the way like a modern executive. It's very hard for the modern executive to get anything done because there's a division of powers. People are afraid of the abuse of power. We always like the saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And We had monarchs at one time, and they certainly seem to illustrate that. And so now the ability of the executive has been weakened to do anything. They do things now, but they do it behind closed doors. Have the other ways of doing things, but they cannot act very strongly because there are so many constraints on their powers to behave. So on the one hand, people want the government to do things. They expect the government to provide many benefits to them. But on the other hand, they're very reluctant to give the government sufficient power to do that. So therefore, they're always dissatisfied with the government. Whenever it does something very strong, everybody gets upset with that because I think it's dangerous to see so much power concentrated in one hand. And usually, in order to become really strong, the government has, in one way or another, violated some laws or violated the Constitution, and it won't be challenged anyway. So there's a perpetual, there's kind of a contradiction. But the purpose, when there was monarchy, then you had a very powerful executive. But at the same time, this person was under the control of the brahmanas. That's what we see here. It wasn't actually all-powerful. The brahmanas were, as the teachers of society, they're actually in charge of training kshatriyas, everybody actually, but particularly this is the kind of team for running the state, the Brahmin kshatriya combination. And so the brahmanas are the teachers and kshatriyas the students. So even from a little age they learn everything from the brahmanas. Even, you'll see in the Mahabharata, the teachers of the Pandavas and the Kurus in military science, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, although they went on the battlefield, because they were actually, that was their subject matter, was military science and political science, still they're brahmanas. You can see that there are different kinds of brahmanas. There are some brahmanas who go off to the forest, and for them they don't pay much attention at all to the material world. They preach, but they don't get involved. Others become advisors to kings, and they use their intelligence, first of all, to give very shrewd practical advice, but also to guide them in the ultimate purpose of what they're supposed to be doing. So this is their function. Even today, many times we see that when somebody becomes elected, they bring into their administration their former teachers in college. To advise and direct them. Of course, these people are salaried employees, which brings us to our next topic, being maintained. The brahmanas are not supposed to take a salary. They're not supposed to be employees. Actually, it says that even in an emergency condition, when a brahmana is supposed to live simply on charity, that is donations. Every varna has its vritti. The word is used here, your vritti dham, I am your maintainer. Your vritti means your means of livelihood, how you maintain yourself. So for a brahmana, the way of maintenance is he receives in charity. Is not supposed to charge, either become an employee or even charge a fee. Is a teacher, that's one of them, to study the Vedas and to teach the Vedas, to perform sacrifice or deity worship and engage others in the same thing, to accept in charity and give in charity. These are the six excuse me, occupational duties of the brahmana. Yajana, yajana, patana, patana, and pratigahanda, dana. So he studies the Vedas. And you can't just study. If you've studied, you also incur an obligation to teach. It's not just accumulating knowledge. You keep it all to yourself. You have to teach, so they have the brahmana has this duty to teach. And so Prabhupada, in a lecture he gave in Chicago, describes how a brahmana goes into a village, sits down somewhere, something available. Apparently, don't have to build a school or. A courtyard, a porch, and begins to teach. Anyone who comes, he teaches. And Prabhupada in another place mentions that the characteristic of a brahmana, one of the characteristics is they can learn anything and teach anything. They have to have that kind of intelligence. And you may notice actually that you may think you've learned a subject matter, you've heard a lecture or studied something, you think you know it. Then somebody asks you, what did you learn, and you can't really reproduce it. Well, you can say that you haven't really learned it until you can teach it. And to teach it means you kind of have to understand it, realize it to some extent, and present it again to somebody else. Properly. So, but this is the characteristic of a brahmana. You're supposed to be able to learn anything. They may have their subject matters, but if necessity, you have to teach this, okay, I'll learn it and I'll teach it. I can do it. It's not that you have some narrow specialty and outside of that you're an idiot. As is often the case with technical knowledge. So he would teach. And the children would come, and so whatever they needed to know, like grammar, mathematics, some geography, some history, whatever it was, he'd teach. And then Prabhupada said he would not ask for remuneration, a fee. And then Prabhupada said, in this way, India meant, meaning traditional India, free education for everyone. Interesting, huh? This is very revealing about Vedic culture, because you don't see anywhere in the Vedas that everyone has a right to a free education. You don't see any talk about people's rights. But what you do see is that the brahmana has a duty to teach. Not it means anyone who can learn, of course. You don't waste your time on people who are either uninterested or incapable. But anyone who can learn. You have an obligation to teach. Can they afford it or not? That doesn't. If they can learn, you have to teach. How do I live? Well, then Prabhupada said, the parents see, oh, this nice brahmana is teaching our children. Let's give him some rice. Let's give him some cloth. And then Prabhupada said, in this way, he had no worries. He had sufficient everything. Now immediately, you see how this won't work. We have our gurukulas, and if you said like that, just send your children, we'll teach them, people would say, because they're modern people, oh, okay, now it's free, we don't have to pay. We won't think, how are these people living, how are they maintaining? And we don't think we're getting something from somebody, we owe them in exchange. See, this is the modern mentality. So you can see this is a quite different mentality. Now, the modern mentality means that actually, in a way, in small towns in America, even when I was a child and living in small towns in America, somebody would do you a favor. You would immediately think, I have to do something back. You would never think that this is great, this is free. But somebody would come and help you or do you a favor, especially, I mean, people you had personal relationships with, they do you a favor. You're then looking out to do something back for them. Now, this is just human life. And this is because of the, you know, social bondage of actual human relationships. But now that's practically disappeared. Everybody's looking to get something for nothing, and somebody gives you something, you never think that you owe them back. You don't think that. You think you've made a good deal. So for example, Prabhupada has remarked that people who receive welfare payments from the government, they're actually incurring a debt. They're getting something for nothing. And he said that if you don't pay it back, what does it mean? Next life, you have to take birth to pay it back. These debts, they're karma. They come also if you lend money to people. You also have to take birth to collect what people owe you. So that's another. These things go on. It becomes part of the karma because you incur obligations to people, and then the person who is a money lender and dies with so many people owing him money, what is he thinking? I want this money. You have to take birth again. I mean, a person is completely detached, it's another thing, but if this is a fruit of person, then, and also the people who owe, they have to pay back. The exception is the brahmanas, by the way. When Prabhupada was asked whether devotees could receive welfare payments, there was a devotee in our temple, Lalit Kumar, who wrote that letter to Prabhupada asking about welfare. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, because it's the duty of the government to support the brahmanas. So he said, go ahead. But he said, you can do it so long as you don't lie. I mean, you have to actually say the thing. So we used to, like, I had the time when there was medical assistance for available for poor people. I just wrote a letter to the state saying that I'm a devotee, I'm serving in the temple. I receive room and board, but no salary or remuneration. And they gave me medical assistance. And then I discovered we had every single devotee can actually just tell the truth and they give you medical assistance. We all have medical coverage. It's all about, you know, welfare reform or whatever. And then they got rid of it. But it was, and there's no problem because people are, that system for the government supporting brahmanas, then that's what they're supposed to do. Supporting people who are workers, who are unemployed, that's wrong. But the government does have a duty to see that there's full employment. That's another thing. That the king, this is a duty of the kshatriya to see that everyone is working. So if you change that into the language of rights, it says everyone has a right to a job. So the government should not complain about unemployed people. It's its business to see that they're employed. So you have to see that an economy is productive, but still, if it's not, then it's the right thing to do, is you have public works projects that employ people. And that was done in the Depression. That's how we have
Hoover Dam.
Oh, not only Hoover Dam, go a half a mile from here and walk in the Wissahickon Gorge. That was all done by the WPA, the Work Progress Administration in the Depression. They got all these stonemasons and everything and put them to work building these bridges and guardhouses and making the roads and the fences and everything. Yeah, they employed all these people. Now they got little historic markers telling you about them. Anybody doesn't remember the 30s because you're too young. You can find out what really happened. Anyway, so the Brahmana's vritti then was not to take any kind of to live on donations, not to either charge a fee or to take a salary. Once you take a salary, you're considered a Shudra. And also not to save for the future. If the donations are more than you need to maintain yourself, then you give it away, to give in charity. You hold a festival, you distribute prasada, you give to some other Brahmana who doesn't have enough, or whatever like that. But you don't keep anything. You don't worry. If one's really worried about a big retirement fund and everything like that, then you're probably not a Brahmana. Because Brahmana means that it trusts, has this faith that Krishna will maintain and protect me. Anyway, so that when the Brahmanas advised the king, also they did not take a salary. Prabhupada is quite emphatic about this in other places. They did not become the employees of the king. Rather, he had his obligation, he got advice and direction from them, so he gave things. But Prabhupada excites the example of Chanakya Pandit, who although he was an advisor to the king, he lived very, very simply, just had a little cottage, Chandragupta. And when he gave advice that wasn't followed, he just quit. He just walked away. Because Brahman is all supposed to be detached. Now, obviously, the difficulty is that, which we have also experienced about living on charity, we also, this temple, we live on donations. And one has to be careful also, because the big donor can then start to dictate dharma to you. I'll give you this, we are worshipping Krishna, and somebody comes and says, I'll give you a big donation, but I want a Durga Puja. And you really need that big donation. So you may, okay, yes, I'll do it some way or other. You can do like that, or I mean, there has to be some kind of donor recognition, we say. But still, you can become dependent upon that. But a Brahmana means you trust Krishna. You're ultimately detached, and you're willing not to to be poor if necessary. That's why it's mentioned that in an emergency, a Brahmana can do other things, like agriculture, or even some trade, if there's no money coming in an emergency. Although that the most recommended thing is that they simply go to the fields where the grain has been threshed and just pick up the leftovers. They don't even engage in any kind of commercial or agricultural activities as recommended. But whatever they do, it says, it should not accept the profession of a dog. That is to say, a dog.
A profession of a dog?
Yeah. Take a master, become an employee. In an age where almost everyone is an employee, this sounds pretty harsh, but basically the Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, are self-employed people. They do not work for other people. They're self-employed. The ones who cannot flourish under those conditions. They simply, if they have land to farm, they muck it up. If you give them money for trade, they go into debt over and over again. They're not vicious. Then they have to serve somebody else. Prabhupada calls it called Shudra. Prabhupada's name for Shudra is general assistant. Not really capable with the judgment for independent action. So, therefore, serve either Brahmanas or Kshatriyas or Vaishyas like that. So you can tell, basically, if you want to see whether someone is a Vaishya or a Shudra, if you want to risk some money on the deal, give them $10,000 and see what happens. If they come back with 20, it's a Vaishya. they come back for more money, it's not a Vaishya. That's one way to tell. So this capacity for independent action and maintaining oneself. Of course, we're set up in an industrial society, and the tendency is now to turn everybody into Shudras. And people who were independent, like, for example, physicians until very recently in this country were independent entrepreneurs, kind of. But now that medicine is becoming more and more industrialized, they're becoming employees of HMOs and so on. And so they're not anymore. They're losing that position. But gradually, as Prabhupada said, in your country, everyone is a Shudra and there's a few Vaishyas. So these Brahmanas here are being maintained by the king and by receiving donations. And so now he's saying, you have to worship me. I'm your maintainer, not the demigods. So people will think like that too. They give a donation, and then sometimes big donors, they want to be worshipped also, because especially somebody like a king, he has all kinds of power and everything. And here he wants to assert particularly his supremacy over the Brahmanas. So sometimes people give donations to people, other people, in order to control them. They want to see that you come under their control. Because they have a further motive, is they want to make sure everybody's under their control. And if somebody's not under their control, they become very nervous. And so somebody like King Vena will actually want to see the Brahmanas become materially attached. And if they become materially attached, then he's confident he can control them by giving or withholding money from them. So it's important for the Brahmanas to be unattached like this. In other words, to really just walk away from the situation necessary or take remedial measures. But this is the demonic mentality to become the supreme controller. People have the controlling tendency, but this controlling tendency is supposed to be regulated by the controlling tendency in itself
is the cause of material bondage, to be the two things we say, the enjoyer and controller. And even just the desire to be the enjoyer and controller in the material world, that by itself makes one a competitor of Krishna, because that's his position. He's the enjoyer of everything and the controller of everyone. That's his position. And so if one becomes a conditioned soul because one wants to become also the controller and the enjoyer. And if one is pious, that desire is regulated by scripture. This is piety. Material piety, we say, is regulated by scripture. And then you have the whole karma kanda style of religion for enjoyers, but who limit their enjoyers according to the regulations of Shastra. But this is a shaky position. It's a shaky position. Prabhupada talks about this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I think, where the description is there of karma yoga, and he's telling people to follow the regulations of scripture, to engage in sacrifice and so on, even if one wants to be the enjoyer. And that higher than that, there are those people for whom there is no duty, those who are really transcendental. There's a higher position even. But those who are not on that position should not be disturbed. They should be told to be engaged according to the rules of scripture. But then he says here, Krishna says in text 34, there are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion, because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So Prabhupada says this: those who are in Krishna consciousness are naturally reluctant to engage in material sense gratification. But those who are not in such consciousness follow the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures. Unrestricted sense enjoyment is the cause of material engagement. For one who follows the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures does not become entangled by the sense objects. According to then he gives the example of marriage. According to scriptural injunction, one is forbidden to engage in sex relationships with any woman other than one's wife, but all other women are to be considered as one's mother. But in spite of such injunctions, a man is still inclined to have sex relationships with other women. These propensities are to be curbed, otherwise they will be stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. As long as the material body is there, the necessities of the material body are allowed, but under rules and regulations. And yet, we should not rely upon the control of such allowances. One has to follow those rules and regulations, unattached to them, because practice of sense gratification under regulations may also lead one to go astray, as much as there is always the chance of an accident even on the royal roads, that is the interstates. Those are our royal roads. The government, the highways. Although they may be very carefully maintained, one cannot guarantee that there will be no danger, even on the safest road. The sense enjoyment spirit has been current a very long, long time, owing to material association. Therefore, in spite of regulated sense enjoyment, there's every chance of falling down. Therefore, any attachment for regulated sense enjoyment must also be avoided by all means. By attachment to Krishna consciousness, or acting always in the loving service of Krishna, detaches one from all kinds of sensory activities. So, this is the advice of there are these injunctions of scriptures. Ultimately, one should be beyond even that, following these rules and regulations, but without attachment to them. Nevertheless, so that's the problem with even regulated sense enjoyment. It's a shaky, Prabhupada describes it as a little shaky, a shaky platform. Then in the 16th chapter, where we get to Krishna's little excursion into demonology, he discusses the demons. Toward the end of the chapter, he summarizes in some ways, ya shastra vidim utsrujya vartate kama karataha na sasiddhim avapnoti na sukham na param gatim. He who disregards scriptural injunctions, shastra vidim. Shastra means the scripture, vidhi, the injunction. Utsuja, he casts them aside, throws them out. So this is the demonic tendency, to throw out the regulations of Shastra. Vartate kama karataha, and acts according to his whims. Kama karataha, according to kama, is conducted by kama. That person attains neither perfection, na sa siddhim, avapnoti, doesn't attain siddhim, perfection, na sukham, nor happiness, na parapgatim, nor the supreme destination. Prabhupada says, as described before, the Shastra Viddhi, or the direction of the Shastras, is given to different castes and orders of human society. Everyone is expected to follow these rules and regulations. If one does not follow them and acts whimsically according to his lust, greed, and desire, then he will never be perfect in his life. So if one ultimately follows these rules, regulations, and moral principles, he is expected gradually to rise up to love of God. So this is the nature. Then the next verse, one should therefore understand what is duty, that is, what is to be done, and what is not to be done, by the regulations of the scriptures. Shastra Pramanam, by the evidence of Shastra. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. This is how Krishna ends the chapter on the nature of the divine and demoniac natures. So this is Vena's problem now. You can see Shastra Vidim Utsridya. He wants to start a new religion with himself as the center. We have seen these when I was visiting Germany. I went to this. I was in Berlin, and I went to visit this a museum that was there at what they call it, Checkpoint Charlie. It used to be, when there was a wall up, it was the one place you could go back and forth between East and West Berlin. They had a museum there for all these different far out devices people made to escape to the West and so on. One part of the museum had Soviet, well, it was advertised as Soviet era kitsch. Do you know the word kitsch? Kitsch means, well, bad art, but this bad, now this was Soviet kitsch. It was like religious art. A lot of religious art is also kitsch. We have our Krishna kitsch. As you see everywhere, they have it. You go to Mexico and you get the Virgin of Guadalajara on velvet, painted on velvet, and you see Elvis. Jesus and Elvis together on it. And, you know, it's these kind of things. Anyway, there was a Soviet kitsch, and there were. Shrines and altars. There were altars to Lenin and Stalin. It was extraordinary to see them like that. And a religion had been started, but where you would expect to see God somehow or other, there was Lenin. This is the demonic tendency. These people put themselves in the position of God, and once they get there, their job seems to be to kill as many people as possible. But they're destructive. But this is the tendency. The God project goes on and on. One gets more and more power. And unchecked power, and in the modern world this has happened. But I was in Romania just after Ceausescu fell down, just a one-day trip through, and one saw what havoc this man had caused, and the whole country was in ruin and waste, and air pollution was coming from the air like snow. Practically nobody had anything to eat, and he had just almost put the finishing touches on his palace, which was huge. Yeah, it was a gigantic place. Nobody knew. At that point they had no idea what to do with it. It was just sitting there locked up, you know. It was typically almost, you know, the last finishing touches were put on when he was deposed. This incredible palace he had built for himself. So you can see that this God competition is there. So we see it early on in King Vena. So we'll get more of this demonology. We'll see how King Vena continues to instruct the Brahmins in the true religion of King Vena. Any questions? Yes.
Chanakya comes up a lot as a singular example of a Brahmin who did not take maintenance from the king. This particular verse implies that the Brahmanas actually were maintained by the king. Is my understanding correct?
Well, maintenance means you take a due. You're supposed to take donations to be maintained. No, the king's duty is to support the Brahmanas. That's why Prabhupada said that the devotees could receive welfare. It's the state's duty to support the Brahmanas.
So how's that different?
That's not a salary. It means it's a donation, and so, the danger for the Brahmana is you can become attached to that money and wealth, and then you become bought. Therefore, the Brahmanas, sama, dama, tapa, socham, these qualities have to be there. Otherwise, you become a hired pundit. And you'll see places in the Bhagavatam where the profession of a priest, the Purohita, is condemned by people like Sukadeva Goswami. Those people who never accept donations, who live in the forest, who don't, they say, I can find them, I'll have to look for them now. But somewhere in Bhagavatam, I read this, condemnation, the Purohita, the family priest, especially of royalty, how that can lead to degradation. by becoming dependent upon that opulence and so on. So it definitely has its dangers. But you don't become the employee, and best is the Brahmin is austere and doesn't, you know, lives very simply, and whatever is given by the king, he passes on to other people. The other thing the king is supposed to do is sacrifice. It is costly, especially in these times. It is quite expensive, and therefore it requires a yajamana, a patron, the person who pays for it, and to whom the benefits of the sacrifice accrue. That's supposed to be the king, is the yajamana that can sponsor these sacrifices. That's his other thing that he does. And then part of that, there's no sacrifice is complete without the Brahmana Dakshin, the priestly remuneration. The priest would also get some donation.
In the case of Chandrakota, because he comes up frequently in Bhagavad class, as an example.
Prabhupada mentions him, yeah.
But his case is different for a lot of reasons. I mean, for example, he's the one who actually enthroned Chandragupta Maurya. Chandragupta Maurya was not born as a royalty. He actually had no ambitions of being a royalty. It was basically Chanakya who was very upset with the Nanda mother and went about this. One can actually say that he was the king by proxy. Because even after he enthroned Chandragupta Maurya, he basically told Chandragupta Maurya how to rule, what to do.
Well, that's okay. That's Brahmana's position. But he's hands-off, too. He's detached. The king is too much involved in the give and take of everyday administration. He loses his perspective. Also because it's a very passionate activity. He needs somebody behind him who's detached and can tell the person what to do, who acts as the advisor. And who also, you know, jnana vijnanam astikyam, he knows the principles of the Vedas, and vijnana means knows how to apply them in concrete circumstances. That's the advisor. The Brahmana is mantri, he's the minister, and advises the advisor to the king. So that's appropriate. It's the brains. It's always the brain. Yeah.
I was just thinking about how in modern day, here they have these campaign contributors, and then they have the big business, like the tobacco companies,
that
contribute. And it just reminded me of what you were saying about how the government has to be very careful about accepting.
Now the politicians, isn't it funny how the politicians actually have to receive charity from their big donors? But but this politics, there's definitely a quid pro quo, as they call it, you know? Yeah, quid pro quo. Something for something. There's an exchange, sure. It's not like some company supports or gives a politician money out of just because they love them. They expect at least access, if not favorable, to be heard.
So it's funny, it seems like they try to control it, like it's against the law for them to accept certain campaign contributions.
Yeah. Well, this is our system of legal bribery. It serves the same function as bribery does, say, in India.
Like they want it like anything, but yeah. They try externally.
Yeah, so it's regulated bribery, the campaign contributions. Yeah.
It actually works for personal enrichment if, for example, you're a congressman or a senator, and the minute you go into office, you start piling up money for your next campaign. And you can run up to $7 million, $8 million, $12 million.
Sure.
And then at the end of your term, if you decide that you don't want to run again, legally that money becomes yours.
Yeah.
Tax-free. So you can actually go take that campaign money, which otherwise should have been used for campaigning, and you can look at positive.
Well, so many nice things are there.
Really?
Yeah, like for example, I was just reading, you know, there's this new legislation involving Medicare. Hardly anyone has read it because the law is 631 pages long. And it's very, very complicated. And it looks like, what it really looks like it does is government money that originally was going to Medicare patients is now going into HMOs, who then will be like feeding at they've waddled right up to the federal trough and stuck their muzzles in their snouts in there big time. Well, the MOA is very, hardly anyone's read it. It's got, it's so intricate, it's 631 pages long. But the guy who wrote it, and who's the only one who really understands it, is now getting out of government service and is going in as a consultant to all these companies. He's the guy, he wrote the stuff. And as soon as it was passed, he goes into the private sector as a consultant.
That's actually very common. I know. Public sector. I mean, it's very common.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It's like they call it the revolving door, you know. And everybody's sort of against it in principle, but in practice.
And if you're really good, you end up like a Dick Cheney, in and out of public service.
Yeah, I know.
And going to private sector, making $30 million a year, and coming back and.
Yeah, it's really gotten quite terrible. So the Kshatriyas are also, actually you see it's backwards, really the Vaishyas are in control. They've hired the government and they've hired the Brahmanas to and really you have to see, when you see the people we have as presidents, you have to wonder who hired them to play the part of the president. You know, because obviously behind there's stuff going on, and everyone doesn't really know exactly what's going on anymore. And so it's quite things are quite backwards. Okay, we need to stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.